This is Flamestock. Join the conversation at 960 960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Flamestock on this Wednesday, January 29th. Pat Steinberg, Aaron Vickers, along with you wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. So every year, Scott Wheeler at The Athletic rolls down his rankings of the 32 NHL teams' prospect systems. And the Flames are up two spots in 2025 from a year ago. They are up from 15 to 13 this year in the annual prospect rankings. And that is with graduating four players from last year's rankings. Dustin Wolf, Matt Coronato, Connor Zary, and Jacob Pelche have all graduated and are no longer a part of the rankings, and yet the Flames still bump up two spots. It's Steinberg and Vickers, and Scott Wheeler joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now from The Athletic. Scott, appreciate the time, my friend. How we doing?
We're doing well. I'm in the car at the moment on the way to a beer league game. I've got number one defenseman Badsy here and our bruising, hard-shooting Bornsey in the back seat. We're headed to play our rivals, the Turtles, and the Trash Pandas are ready to go.
Scott, how would you evaluate yourself as a prospect?
Oh, boy. I'm no longer a prospect. I was never a prospect, if I'm being honest. I don't even know if I qualify as a beer league hero. We'll call myself average.
Good in the room, though, right?
Yeah, GM here.
Yeah. As some GMs always say, if you're so good in the room, why don't you stay there? Just kidding. We're happy to have you. No, honestly, it's the top 15 prospects. And Scott does this for all 32 teams over at the Athletic. But for the Flames, top 15 prospects with a huge write-up on each one. And it's must-read stuff for a Flames fan. And Scott, I guess first of all, the fact that this group moved up from 15 to 13 with graduating the four players I talked about, that really speaks to just how strong the 2024 draft class was for Calgary, hey?
Yeah, anytime you take two picks in the first round and two picks in the second round, that helps. I thought they did well with all four of those picks as well. So that's half of it. You'd expect to take a bit of a step back after losing some of the guys that they did take. I think Zane Parekh kind of changes the picture of their pool, though. Without Zane, it's a different picture. I think it's a deep group, especially on defense, frankly. After Zane, I think there's a number of guys on defense that are really, really interesting. But you add Zane, you add Matt Vigridin, you add Andrew Bascha, you add Jacob Battaglia, and there's just more depth than there was a year ago, even with some of the graduations. And then you've got, for the first time in a long time, honestly, you've got Zane at the top as kind of a true, true top prospect. I have a lot of time for Connor Zary and even Samuel Honzik, who's still a part of that group, Matt Coronato, you go down the list, but they weren't top of the lineup projections. They weren't players who were going to be stars on your first power play and potentially lead your team in scoring kind of thing. And I think Zane, even as a defenseman, frankly, has an opportunity to be that level of a talent. I think we're talking about one of the three or four most talented prospects outside of the NHL from a pure skill standpoint, one of the best offensive D prospects to come out of the OHL in some time. Really, you got to go all the way back to the Ryan Ellis types when Ryan Ellis was doing crazy things in the OHL. Certainly there's been Brant Clark and Aaron Ekblad and others in recent years, but Zane's a special talent. We're talking about a kid who's going to score 30 goals in the OHL as a defenseman in back-to-back years, 90 points in the OHL in back-to-back years. I think he'll be the PP1 guy for the Canadian World Junior team next year. And I think someday you're looking at a player who has a chance to be a 60, 70-point defenseman, one of the top 10 leading scorers amongst defensemen in the NHL. That's the kind of talent we're looking at here. So if Zane hits, it sort of completely changes the look of what the future looks like for the Calgary Flames. But I think the importance with the pool is what's behind that as well. And with the Flames, they're in a really strong spot behind Zane.
The big thing that a lot of people talk about in this market, Scott, when talking about Zane Parekh is, okay, the defensive side and the rounding out of his game. What have we seen even this year from Zane in terms of steps taken in his overall game in Saginaw?
Well, you're talking to the wrong guy in terms of even the perceptions about Zane. I've argued for the last 2.5 years here that Zane is a much better defender than people have ever given him credit for. He played 30 minutes a night in the OHL playoffs last year while playing injured throughout those playoffs. He played 30 minutes a night against the best junior players in the country at the Memorial Cup. He has defended on the penalty kill in the last year and a half at a very high level for Saginaw. The complication with Zane, and people see it when they watch him play and it sticks out like a sore thumb, is that he's got a very, very loose posture. And so when he's defending, it's one hand on his stick a lot of the times. He's not physical. He can kind of look a little like Erik Karlsson or Evan Bouchard, and that just sort of lackadaisical approach to defending at times. And once a game, he might get burned where he's not hard enough on a puck, or he doesn't box out in front, or he lets a guy slip past him just because he's frankly not working hard enough. But by and large, I actually think he defends at a very high level. He's got great feet. He uses a really, for his, as skilled as he is, he actually uses a very, very long stick. Good timing on gaps and all of that. So I'm a big, big believer in Zane. He's never going to defend maybe like you'd like a number one or number two defenseman in the NHL to defend in terms of the look. He doesn't look like some of the sort of premium upper echelon types. This isn't Victor Hedman or Alex Pietrangelo. He's not that type and never will be. But he's got a good head on his shoulder, and I think he'll defend at a high enough level that his teams will be able to trust him to go out there offensively, a lot like Evan Bouchard has kind of emerged as a 60, 70-point defenseman in Edmonton. He's trusted just enough to play 25 minutes a night, even if he's not your typical 25-minute-a-night defenseman. So I think that's what we're looking at in Zane. The offense is going to be so great, and I think he's got some underrated quality in terms of how he defends with his stick and how he sort of gaps up and defends the rush and all of that. He'll be able to get by in the NHL. I'm not worried about that.
Scott Wheeler's with us from The Athletic, and this week his ranking of the top 15 Flames prospects is out and a must-read for Flames fans. He's joining us here on Flames Talk. It's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers. Vix?
Scott, I feel like Parekh is sort of automatic, so I want to take a step back before we delve into a little bit more of the list, and we won't reveal it all. We'll send people over to The Athletic to read, but I'm just curious from your perspective, what's your methodology when coming up with both the organizational rankings 1 through 32, and then what do you value in prospects when you're determining each individual team list?
Yeah, it's a good question. I really start the process in, even though they come out in January, I start the process in sort of late October, early November every year. I put together a loose top 15 for all of the teams, and then I send that a list around to scouts and agents and skills coaches for some of these clubs and some of the people that are involved on the amateur side in terms of development, and say, is there anything that jumps out to you about the way I've got it sorted? I break it up into tiers for them as well. And then once I get that feedback, I'll occasionally go back and spend more time on guys. Then I'm at the World Juniors, where I get to see, in any given pool, you get to see about a third of those 15 players live at the World Juniors. And then it's just about more phone calls, more tape. We've got a scouting service at The Athletic that we pay for called Instat that gives us access to all of the players and all of their shifts in virtually every league on the planet. That's a huge tool for us. We cut down a 2.5-hour game into whatever the actual player's shifts are. So for Zane Parekh, you can watch a 2.5-hour game in 25 minutes, which is huge. And then it's just a video. I spend about 2 days a week out of my 5-day work week watching video, and the other three are for writing stories and doing interviews. And I just got to make sure that I'm on top of these kids. You don't get 10, 15, 20 viewings of every kid. Certainly the kids that are at the World Junior Summer Showcase and U18 Worlds and the World Men's World Championships and the World Juniors and the Memorial Cup and the places where I'm at live games, and certainly around the OHL where I get to rinks a little bit more often. Those kids all see that range, but many of these kids, it's just 2 or 3 viewings over the course of 4 or 5 years, and you get comfortable enough with them, plus some conversations, to make an assessment. And then the premium guys are the premium guys, and you've got to make time for them for sure. So that's how it starts. And then in January, you sort of put it all together. And the things I prioritize are increasingly less about the specific tools. I think coming out of the last lockout, there was such an emphasis on the NHL is going to become a track meet and it's got to be north-south and everybody's got to be able to skate. And I think increasingly we're seeing that change. Certainly skating in defenders is a big priority with NHL clubs. The teams that have won at the highest level in recent years, you look at St. Louis, you look at after St. Louis to Washington, to Tampa, to Florida, they all had big, long, rangy blue lines that could really skate. But I think up front, the game has changed big time. Bottom sixes are now constructed much differently than they were 10 years ago. And I think up front, it's about smarts. It's less about speed. I actually think the game really slows down inside the offensive zone these days. Certainly, there's a bit of a track meet through neutral ice, but once puck possession happens in the offensive zone, it's more about finding soft space and making plays and making good reads with the puck and winning your battles and that kind of a thing. So that's what it's about. For me, it's about the processing piece and the IQ piece and how these guys make their decisions out there, more so than who can shoot it the hardest, who can skate the fastest, that kind of a thing.
All right, with that, let's jump back into the Flames list that you've got here. And you've got it divided into three tiers. Zane Parekh is in a tier by himself, and then number two and number three are in their own tier as well. Matvei Greiden of Shawinigan and Sam Honzik, who's with the Wranglers right now. In terms of Greiden and Honzik, what separates them most from the rest of the pack for the Flames?
Well, I think with Greiden, it's the skill level. I think he's just a slight cut above the rest of their forwards. I've got a lot of time for Adar Sanayev and some of the other forwards in their group. Sanayev in particular is having an excellent year at UMass and looks like a legit prospect. But I think with Greiden, it's just there's a little bit more of a skill element there. He's got more power play upside at the NHL level than some of those other guys. And I think ultimately, if Greiden does make it, it'll be as a top six winger. And if some of those other forwards below him make it, it'll more likely be as a middle six or bottom six type. So that's the distinction there. A bit of a slow start in Shawinigan this year as he moved from the USHL to the QMJHL, but he's ramped it up of late and been much better. And he's one of the more gifted offensive players in that league, frankly. Honzik's an interesting one. I felt in Honzik's draft year that he was more of a late first than a mid first. Big kid, really, really smart, detail-oriented, works hard, above-average tools, but there's not a lot of in Honzik's game that really grabs you in terms of a high-end quality or a high-end quality or two, frankly. I expect that Honzik's just going to be a really, really solid top-nine pro who can play all three forward positions, was a winger, and then he was a center, and then he was back to wing, but he's got size, and he's a smart player, and he's got some skill. So I think he'll be a piece of the puzzle in the top-nine long-term for the Flames, but I don't see a true high-end guy there. The projection there and the reason that he's ahead of some of those other guys and the glut of defensemen in particular that are right behind him is just about the safety of Honzik. There's not a lot of risk with Honzik's projection. He's going to have a long career.
And in looking in that third tier at number four, Hunter Brustevich, all the way down to 15, Luke Miesa in the same tier. Is that normal throughout the other 31 teams in the NHL having it that grouping that tight? Or are we talking about fractions and margins when you consider the difference between number four, Brustevich, and number 15, Miesa?
Well, typically the top end pools, so the pools that are in the top 10, they'll have six or seven sort of really, really quality guys. And then you get sort of once you're into the teams, you're just looking at guys that you hope can make it. So the fact that there's sort of four or maybe five for the Flames does suggest that they're maybe right outside that sort of true top prospect pool league-wide kind of thing. But in saying that, having Luke Miesa at 15, having some of the more down-ballot, down-ranking guys, if you will, that still look like they've at least offered something. Even Andrew Bascha is down at the bottom of my list. And Andrew's a player that I had sort of slotted as a late first, early second in last year's draft. Been a bit more of a challenging year for him this year in Medicine Hat. There have been a few players in Medicine Hat that haven't sort of lived up to the billing as they've tried to push for a WHL title here. But those are still legit prospects. Like, I think Andrew Bascha's got a chance to play in the league. So the depth is there. There were a couple of players that I left off of the top 15. I sort of cut it off at 15. There were a couple of players I left off as well that I think are at least have a chance. So the depth is there, but I think outside of Zane, you maybe are missing of in terms of talking about a top prospect pool, you're maybe missing another, maybe not Zane caliber, but another sort of star caliber prospect or two behind Zane.
And then, of course, Zane at number one, as we've talked about. And then four through seven are all defensemen as well, with Brustevich, Etienne Morin, Jeremy Poirier, and Henry Muse. Is it fair to say and point to, positionally at least, it's defense that's powering this pool right now for you?
Yeah, big time. And frankly, defensemen that all look and play very similar styles and are fighting for the same jobs in the NHL. So that competition is actually the most interesting layer of the Flames pool, if you will. It's a very unique pool that way, where all of the defensemen sort of look the same. They've some other sort of deeper depth guys that have more size and play more of a stay-at-home penalty-killing potential future role. But up top, after Zane, there's probably only room for one or two of those guys to make it to the NHL, whether it's a Muse or a Brustevich or an Etienne Morin. There's really only going to be one or two jobs on an NHL roster for those guys. If Zane's your PP1 guy, all of those players need to run a power play in order to be effective in the NHL. I think they're all offensively tilted players. And ultimately, there's the typical role for that is you've got your first pairing guy who's your star, and I think that's what you hope Zane will become. And then most NHL rosters decide to build out their PP2 with a guy from the third pairing who's offensively inclined, who they can kind of shelter at 5-on-5. And I think that's the role that those other four guys are going to be scrapping for. I do think a player like Brustevich is so smart as a player that he could be more of a 5-on-5 guy and doesn't necessarily have to play on a power play to be successful. But certainly, like, there's no question Jeremy Poirier and Henry Muse, if they're playing in the NHL, the reason they're there is to provide a spark on a power play. So if those jobs don't become available, eventually you start to lose your value sitting in the AHL every year. And it'll be interesting to see which of those four players sort of rises above the crop and establishes themselves in the league.
All right, we've talked a little bit about what is in this Calgary Flames pool. What's missing? Is it that top-end C that the Flames are missing, that you just can't put them in the top 10 just yet because they're missing?
Yeah, that's the conversation for a lot of teams. Every team wishes that they had had that kind of center depth. I mean, there are certainly teams in the league that have more of it than others. I look at the Columbus Blue Jackets, who haven't come out yet. They drafted Adam Fantilli 2 years ago, and then they drafted Caden Lindstrom a year ago. So there are teams that have those sort of prototypical top-of-the-lineup centers coming. The Flames, obviously, are not one of those teams. Even the guys that have graduated, Matt Coronato, Connor Zeri, they're wingers, right? So it's the hardest thing to find other than a number one defenseman. If Zane can become that, that'll be huge. But you basically have to draft in the top 10 or spend $10 million on it in free agency. And we know that the troubles that the Flames have had in terms of attracting free agents of that caliber to come to play in Calgary. So you've got to do it through the draft. If they're just competitive enough that they're not drafting in the top 5 or the top 10 moving forward, then it may be hard for them to go out and find that sort of first line center of the future. So that's a tricky proposition. Maybe you parlay a trade to make it happen. Maybe you overspend in free agency to make it happen. But if you're counting on finding a David Pastrnak in the late first round or a Nikita Kucherov, obviously those are wingers, but those guys are occasionally, though very rarely, available in the late first or early second. That's a very, very rare occurrence. Obviously, Braden Point is maybe an exception to that, but by and large, first-line centers come from the very top of the draft.
Last one with Scott Wheeler, who's joining us here on this Wednesday edition of Flames Talk. It's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Scott Wheeler from The Athletic. He ranked Calgary's top 15 prospects, and I won't give you the whole thing because I want to go and direct you to the article, but Zane Parekh, number one. Matvei Greening, number two. Sam Honzek, number three. He's got three different tiers. Zane's in his own tier. Greening and Honzek in the second tier, and then 4 through 15 in the next tier. Just a last one for you, and I asked Scott, because it's been a really hot button topic in this market since Rory Karens came up last week and was able to generate some points. He's been sent back to the American League, but you know, here he is. He's one of the most prolific players in the American Hockey League this year. Now he's gotten a taste of the NHL. Where is Rory Karens going in your eyes? You've got him ranked as your number 9 prospect for the Flames.
Well, Karens is, but first and foremost, a huge success story. One of the great success stories, honestly, in the sort of prospect world of the last 3 or 4 years here. Here's a kid who, coming out into the draft, was viewed as average at everything, average size, average skill, average pace, decently competitive, decently smart. But those guys typically, even if they score 90 or 100 points in the OHL, guys with that makeup typically just become second or third line AHL guys, maybe get a call up or a cup of coffee or two. I think what Karens has done to emerge as not just a top player in the AHL and a first-line guy in the AHL, but a legit call-up option. I thought he played really well in his sort of first cup of coffee in the NHL with the Flames. Obviously, was productive right away, which helps sort of get the monkey off your back. But I think what makes him interesting is that all of those tools, if they were average pre-draft, have kind of elevated to above average. Still doesn't have a dynamic quality, isn't going to play high in a lineup, but could he become a third line guy who can contribute at 5-on-5, 20 or 25 points a year, the kind of player who makes $2 or $3 million instead of league minimum? I think that's what you're hoping for with Rory.
Scott, that was awesome stuff. Really, really appreciate the time. Really appreciated the read over at The Athletic as well. The Flames coming in number 13 on your list of 32 NHL teams prospect systems. Thanks for the insight on this Wednesday afternoon, and go Trash Pandas.
Yep, cheers, fellas. We're just pulling in here. Thanks.
Good stuff. Thanks, Scott. Scott Wheeler of The Athletic joining us here on Flames Talk. And, Zane Parekh, I think if you're a Flames fan, and Vix, you're a prospects guy as well. Mm-hmm. So Scott Wheeler's over at The Athletic. Vix, you're the purveyor and overseer. And
Scott Wheeler's an alumni.
Of FC Hockey?
Yes, he is.
I was about to say, you are the grand poobah of FC Hockey. What the Zane Parekh thing, just to wrap it up before we wrap up this segment. Are you of the same opinion as The Athletic and Scott in terms of how special Zane Parekh is? Because that was like, if you're a Flames fan and you heard that from another one of the foremost prospects experts out there, like you are, like, is that's got to be really encouraging for Flames fans. Where would you be on Zane Parekh?
Well, there's no doubt he's the top prospect in the organization, and he's one of the top defense prospects in hockey in general. For me, the question is going to be, what can he be at the NHL level? Is he going to be a bona fide number one? Is he going to be a guy that can play 25 minutes a night that you're willing to maybe sacrifice a sliver of the defensive element of it to maximize the offensive capabilities that he has? The way he moves, the way he handles the puck, the way he sees things, his vision are no doubt in my mind at all NHL caliber and upper echelon of NHL caliber. My question is going to be, what can he max out as? And can he be a true number one if he can't give you something very similar in the defensive end that he's able to do in the offensive zone?
Scott Wheeler over at The Athletic with his Flames top 15 prospects. It's must-read stuff. And Scott joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Enjoy hockey and football game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Pickup and delivery available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344.